This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Yannick Magnan.
And I'm Luc-Olivier Dumébrier.
And our topic this week is...
the Sony consoles.
Awesome. But first, we've got some follow-up.
Yes, we do. Let's start with the zombie episode. The episode that never dies. So yes, again, we have follow-up regarding episode 2, mobile payments. So this week, MacRumor reports that MasterCard may support Apple Pay in Canada. Yes, Canada, Brazil, and Australia, and Asia this year. So the leak says that there's got some internal document that were referring to the 2016 roadmap that says that those country and regions were coming later this year. Next up, we complained a lot in the past since both Yannick and I got iPad Pros that Google Apps, especially YouTube, hasn't been updated to support new feature and especially the native resolution of the iPad Pro. But the latest update has been updated to support one of the two things that I mentioned. And the first one is native resolution. We're still missing picture-in-picture and or a split screen. Hopefully they're coming soon, but I don't get my hopes too high for that.
Yep, I'd also like to add that last episode in the show notes, I had written that PipTube, which was the app that I mentioned during the episode for picture-in-picture, had its API access revoked, and magically an update appeared like the day after the episode was posted, and it works again. So I don't know what's going on, but I hope it continues to work for a while. So if you're looking for picture-in-picture on an iPad Pro with YouTube, you can go download PipTube on the App Store, and it's currently, fingers crossed, still working.
Good. Next up is follow-up regarding our last episode regarding gaming. So
actually, I still had some iPad Pro follow-up to go.
Oh, all right. I forgot about that. Go on.
Yep. Okay, so... on the last episode, we had talked a little bit about UI navigation not being possible on the Apple Pencil in iOS 9.3 betas, and Apple backtracked on their intentions to stop supporting that. The cries of protest worked, and now with the latest beta, which came out yesterday, apparently UI navigation works with Apple Pencil, which is great for people who wanted that. I remembered an annoyance I had from using the Pencil to manipulate the UI in Procreate, which is the drawing app that I use with the Apple Pencil. And that is, it seems to me that maybe the initial releases of iOS 9 for the iPad Pro, they hadn't tuned completely touch recognition for the tip of a pencil. And so what I found to be most frustrating is you trigger accidental swipe gestures on table view cells or accidental scrolling in scroll views when you actually intend to tap on things, because the algorithm acts as if it's your pencil, if it's your finger that's touching the screen, and therefore it's expecting a much bigger tap zone than what you're actually doing. But since the tap zone is tiny, 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 then the estimated difference in things is much greater than if you had a larger touch target. I'm probably butchering the explanation, but basically it means the tip of the pencil is much, much more sensitive to gestures than the fingers are. And possibly these new betas would be tuning that. I don't know, but it was something that frustrated me when I was using it. Another thing I forgot to mention on the iPad Pro episode is a podcast called Canvas on Relay FM, which is entirely focused on using iOS for productivity. And if you liked the last episode, then you should probably subscribe to that podcast, because every week there is a focused topic, like, let's say, document providers, which I blogged about this week, or
photo editing was on recently.
Photo editing, yeah. So stuff like that. And they recommend a bunch of apps that are generally the best at doing those tasks. So if you are a heavy iOS user, you should probably go check out that podcast. Now we can get to the actual gaming topics.
You're right. So let's start with Nintendo. So Nintendo last week announced the next generation of Pokemon games, and they are called Moon and Sun. And they also announced that the worldwide release will happen this holiday. Also, something we forgot to mention during the Nintendo episode is that the first generation of Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow games are now out on the 3DS Virtual Console.
Well, we couldn't actually mention it on the last episode because they weren't out yet.
They were not out yet, but they were at least announced that it should be
out. Yeah, they were going to come out.
Exactly. And I think you do have also have other news regarding Nintendo that is pretty interesting for the probability of the 3DS.
Yeah, well, there are two things. I'm going to start with the 3DS one. We mentioned on that episode that one of the big games that made the 3DS sales turn around in Japan was Monster Hunter. What we didn't really elaborate on is what was the big game that caused people to flock to the 3DS in the West. And it came up to my attention this week because the sequel came out to that game. And the first real system seller for the 3DS in the West was Fire Emblem Awakening. And I read the Iwata Asks, which it was actually the final Iwata Asks that he did before dying. For Fire Emblem Fates this week, which is the sequel. And it was originally supposed to be the final game in the Fire Emblem series because sales had been dwindling over time. But it was such a radical departure from past entries in the series that it ended up doing incredibly, incredibly well. And on top of that, it doesn't help that it was like the first big real game for hardcore gamers on the 3DS that was really impressive. And that pushed 3DS sales incredibly in the West. It came out a couple years later, I think it was 2 years later in North America than it did in Japan, but it made a huge difference to sales when it came out. And regarding Fire Emblem Fates, which came out last week, it's had the best launch of any Fire Emblem title in the series in the West. So that is a great thing for the Fire Emblem fans in the West. As a fan of Intelligent Systems' other series, Advance Wars, I'm sort of worried that they are going to keep milking the Fire Emblem cash cow because it's been since the Game Boy Advance, since the Nintendo DS that we haven't had a real Advance Wars title, and I am really missing that series. But Fire Emblem is an adequate replacement for the time being, and I am greatly awaiting my copy in the mail, except the mail is delayed because of the crazy snowstorm this week.
Which is funny because next week it should be like back to spring weather here. So maybe you'll get it before next week.
Who knows? Next up, we can move on to Microsoft. We omitted a big thing on the Microsoft episode, which is that Microsoft owns Minecraft now. It's total cultural phenomenon, except neither of us actually care about it, so we forgot about it.
Yeah, I think that's the big problem. And I want to touch Minecraft a bit regarding this week's Microsoft press conference. So this week Microsoft demoed a couple of interesting technologies and games coming in the near future. So they started by demoing their Forza game on 4K PCs for the first time. So if I recall correctly, it's 4.6 or maybe some kind of like derived game using the Forza 6 engine. But they were able to create a PC game, and they announced that in the future, some of those big names will come at the same time on the PC and on Xbox. And they also teased a bit that they kind of like wandered around and wasn't so sure. They wanted to make it that clear about this maybe, not certain, but maybe future unification of PC gaming and the Xbox. But to me, it felt very vague. They were like teasing that maybe the Xbox as a name will become more of the online service, and then PC will still stay as PC gaming. But what they were pretty clear about is they are doing a big push for developers to adopt their new I would say APIs to build games and applications that use the Windows 10 environment, which will both work on the PC and on Xbox.
So what's funny about that is that this isn't the first time they've tried to do that. They tried to do this with DirectX 10 and Games for Windows Live when the Xbox 360 came out, and now they're doing it again with DirectX 12 and the Xbox One. And every single time it's failed, so I don't have much confidence that it's going to work now, but I guess it's interesting.
Yeah, you touch a point, but if I recall correctly, when they tried it with the 360, were they pushing their big exclusive title also on the PC at the same time?
Certain of them, yes. Actually, and the interesting thing about Games for Windows Live is that it was cross-compatible with Xbox Live, so certain games actually let you play PC players on Xbox and Xbox players on PC because they were basically the same game running on two different platforms. And especially now that the Xbox One actually is running Windows 10, there's basically no distinction, and it's running on Intel hardware as well. So it's basically the same game running in two places. It's not entirely surprising that they're doing this, and given the relative lack of traction that the Xbox One has right now in the market, it's probably a better move to actually get those Xbox One exclusive games to actually do well.
No, you're right, and you touched especially where I want you to go is when I was reading about this news and about the press conference, I was like, maybe the one or two games that are exclusive to the Xbox that I want to play, maybe then I'll just be able to install Windows on my Mac and play to them, and voila, problem solved.
Well, I hate to rain on your parade, but Eurogamer posted some benchmark videos of Rise of the Tomb Raider on PC, and I'm pretty sure your Mac isn't able to handle it, and I'm pretty sure most PCs actually aren't able to handle it at a reasonable frame rate, so you can give up on that right now.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'll give up. The next thing that the mode at this press event was Minecraft on Oculus, which I found pretty interesting, just because maybe either a day before or on the same press event, they announced that they were releasing the HoloLens dev kit.
Yeah, and they demoed Minecraft on the HoloLens like a year ago.
Exactly. So it feels to me that maybe it's not ready for gaming yet, because as far as I remember, the HoloLens has more of an AR push than a VR. So it was more on augmented reality than virtual reality. And maybe they will want to backtrack on it a bit and have a competitor for all of those VR headsets.
Well, I think, first of all, the HoloLens, this is something that's not actually mentioned about it very often, is that the viewport for it is actually fairly small. It's like a rectangle in the middle of your field of view, but it doesn't actually take over your entire field of view when you're wearing the HoloLens on. And that's a big distinction to something like the Oculus, which is your entire field of view when you're wearing it. And I think that it's different enough to actually warrant being on both. And the other thing is that, like, Minecraft is basically the cash cow that they can basically put on everything and it will sell a ton of copies. And that's sort of Microsoft's new thing as of last year is, let's make software we can put everywhere and milk it as much as we can. And they've been doing that with Office on iOS and on Android. And I think that this is sort of the same thing done to gaming, where they have this highly successful franchise now in Minecraft, and they just want to put it everywhere and get as much money as they can, because why not?
Yeah, and I guess they will be, they have like this base as Minecraft that they could just like try everything and make sure that even if they want to do new hardware or support competitors' hardware, they still know that even if it is like a minimal success, a minimal success for Minecraft is millions and millions of dollars. So it can easily be a good investment.
The other thing I want to mention just before we move on is that Minecraft has an absolutely huge modding community. And a lot of that modding community is with kids. And I think that it's incredibly interesting to me to think that Minecraft might actually be the best developer environment for kids to develop VR or to start thinking about developing for VR. I know that kids themselves are probably not going to be able to afford VR headsets for many years now, but inevitably some of them will have gamer parents and will sort of get to experience it through that. And I think that's very interesting for the future of gaming, even though it's not necessarily something that excites me personally, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. I still think that it's interesting to give kids basically this much more interactive toy box than what they are used to.
Good. Let's jump into the main topic.
All right.
So for our last episode about video gaming for a while, hopefully for a couple of weeks, tonight, we will speak about the Sony consoles, and like both last episode about Nintendo and Microsoft, the format will stay mostly the same, so I would like to do a small retrospective from the launch of the console till now, and then give a look at a couple of stats, and then mostly talk about the current situation and our experience with the console. So let's start with the PS4 and its history. So the PS4 was launched in North America in November 2013 and in February 2014 in Japan, which was a detail I forgot about.
I was there.
Right. And do you remember the reason why it got, quote-unquote, delayed in Japan?
Because no Japanese companies had games for it, and they actually still didn't on February 2014.
Yeah, that's the reason Sony gave to the press. They were saying, like, we want to wait 3 or 4 months just to make the console more, like, ready for, like, be readier for the market, for the Japanese market. But the detail I don't remember is, why does the Japanese game developers were not that ready at the launch of the PS4?
Because nobody plays home consoles in Japan. It's like I've mentioned on the Nintendo episode, it's basically the polar opposite of this market, where here there basically aren't very many handheld games being played and everything is in console. Over there, because they don't spend very much time at home, because they're always at work or in commutes, they're doing much more gaming on their handhelds and on their phones, and consoles take a backseat.
Good. And a last major point in the PS4 history is they were part of the first console to be sold in China in May 2014. Sony and other electronics company did a big push on China because, if I recall correctly, China changed their laws about external electronics and importing electronics built in other countries, and Sony started to sell the PS4 in China, and if I recall correctly, the Vita is now also sold in China.
That sounds right. It's a nice upgrade from the Chinese version of the N64 that was basically the other console they got before that. And there is a YouTuber called Low Score Boy that lives in Taiwan who occasionally puts really technical and interesting videos on his channel. And one of the videos he did was on the Taiwanese equivalent to the Super Nintendo. Consoles that people outside of China and the surrounding territories have basically never seen this hardware at all. And it was incredibly enlightening to watch it. It was entirely in Taiwanese, so I didn't actually understand most of it. But luckily, certain characters overlap with Japanese. I was able to get a little bit of understanding here and there. And it's really interesting to see, like, the crazy stuff that's going on in China with regards to gaming, because they're sort of isolated from our gaming culture, and likewise, we are very isolated from their gaming culture.
Yeah, and I think it is a big push from Sony, because like you mentioned, the last console was N64, which is pretty old. Next point, compared to the Xbox One and the Wii U, the PS4 is selling great, and we also have official numbers for it too. So as of January 3rd of this year, Sony sold 35.9 million consoles, which means that it also includes the last holiday, which is a big start. I'm not sure if it will sell as good as previous console, but the way that it starts right now, it is a good start.
Yep.
On the other side, if we were to try to take a look at the most popular games on the best-selling game on the PS4, those statistics are quite hard to find. We were able to find a couple of statistics regarding the top 20 best-selling games of 2015 on the PS4, and there's a couple of good ones, I would say. Like, obviously the number one is Call of Duty Black Ops 3, which is expected. Number two is a Grand Theft Auto 5, which is also expected. Number three is Minecraft PlayStation 4 edition. And I won't go through the list, but it feels to me that all of the I did take a note the top 10, and most of the top 10 is game that everybody is speaking about and enjoying these days. So we can talk about Star Wars, Destiny, there's Bloodborne too. So Sony have a lot of great sellers at this point right now, and I think it is helping their great success.
Yep, definitely.
Great. So now I'm done with stats. Next, let's talk about our experience with the console and the current situation. So like I mentioned a lot in the past, I won't go back too much about that, but I'm pretty a recent PS4 owner. I've bought my PS4 last November, so I'm still like trying to, not to learn it, but to find the new functionalities and enjoy the new games and seeing the differences between the last gen and this gen. And Yannick, you're at the stage where you kind of found your niche game, and you'll not niche, but your game that you want to play and enjoy most of the time. I know that you mentioned a lot in the past that you play tons of Destiny.
Yep.
And what about other games?
Yeah. Nowadays, I basically rotate three games around. So I play Destiny quite a bit. I checked my hours this week. I've played 620 hours of Destiny since I got my PS4 2 years ago, which is okay, I guess. I'm playing Darius Burst Chronicle Saviors, which is a port of an arcade shooter by Taito that was released in arcades in 2011, and they made an arcade-perfect port for the PS4 last winter, and it is easily one of the best, I think it was $40 I've spent on a download PS4 title. And it really helps because I'm a big fan of the series, so it was really nice to be able to get an arcade-perfect port of a game that we are basically never going to get. Complete with leaderboards, and basically there's an emulated arcade machine server on the cloud that you can share with other people in the community. So there's a forum that shares the same arcade cabinet in the cloud, and we can progress the arcade unlocks together. Basically, we can unlock things for other people on the same quote machine as us, which is really interesting as a mechanic and something you rarely see for arcade ports at home. But the team is really passionate about it, and they know that the community is rather small but wants to enjoy this game as well, and they ported it, and it's a great port. And there's also usually a fighting game in there somewhere, so I've been playing Skullgirls and more recently Street Fighter V. I'm a little sad that Street Fighter V's matchmaking rather lacking on PS4. Well, apparently it's the same on it's cross-platform multiplayer now, but the servers have been completely unreliable since launch, so I haven't had the chance to play more than like two games online, which is pretty bad for a fighting game. And the problem is that release of Street Fighter V was incredibly rushed. And the problem is that it basically has no features aside from, well, you can play this story mode, which takes 5 minutes to complete for each character in the roster. And there are 16 characters. So do the math. That's not very long. And you can also play online, except the servers don't work. So that is basically Street Fighter V. It's not a great sell for like $60, but it's probably going to get better someday. Maybe.
Yeah, at this point, the way you're explaining it, it sounds more like an investment than a game you can enjoy now.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I don't want to digress too much on Street Fighter because this isn't the Street Fighter episode, but Street Fighter 4, the way that worked is every year or so, there were major balance patches that were made because it was made in the arcade environment first, and they would make balance patches to basically make it so that it's more fair to play with any character, basically, instead of having some characters that were overpowered over others, which is generally how things go with those kinds of fighters. And there was vanilla Street Fighter, then there was Super Street Fighter, then there was Super Street Fighter 4 2012 Arcade Edition, and then there was Hyper Street Fighter 4, and then Ultra Street Fighter 4, I think. It's hard to keep track of all of these things, but basically all of these were different DLC tiers. And they've said for Street Fighter V that they're getting rid of all of that, and they're making it free with an asterisk, which is you can get in-game currency to buy it with if you play a lot, which probably isn't happening right now because you can't connect to the servers. Or you can use Zenny, they call it, which is an alternative currency you can use with real money. And then you can buy... balance patches are free because everybody needs to be on the same balance patches for the online to work. But you can buy additional characters and whatnot with Zenny starting this month. And apparently the game is supposed to be getting regular updates starting this month. So it's more Street Fighter as a service as opposed to Street Fighter as a game plus DLC every year. Which is an interesting model. The problem is that most other games that follow that model are free to play. And Street Fighter V is $60 up front. And the free to play offerings have more features than the $60 offering that Street Fighter V is right now. So there's a lot of controversy in this in the community about Street Fighter V. And then there's also that they actually simplified the gameplay quite a bit to make it more accessible to beginners. And anyone who's played Street Fighter before knows that the way Street Fighter works, your fundamentals need to be really good, and then the rest is basically just icing on the cake, but you don't really need it to be good at Street Fighter. And they've removed a lot more of that icing on the cake in Street Fighter V and focused really on making a game where the fundamentals are very important to get right. And I think that's great for me because I suck at Street Fighter. but I think that people who are very serious Street Fighter 4 players think Street Fighter 5 is lacking in technical aspects that made Street Fighter 4 interesting. So there's also that dynamic, which is worrisome, because if the online community dies down, then you sort of have this dead game on your hand. And I know a lot of people in the Street Fighter community are looking at Street Fighter 5 to not become like Smash Brothers Brawl was to the Smash Brothers scene, where it's 2016 right now, and I think that Smash Melee came out in like 2003, and people are still playing Smash Brothers Melee competitively because they don't like the new games, and they don't want that to happen again with Street Fighter. So it's a really messy situation, and on top of that, it's a PS4 exclusive. So you've got a really weird situation on your hands, Street Fighter V, but on the whole, I actually kind of like it.
Good. To bring us back to our topic a bit, I do have two questions. The first one is, that's mostly most of the game that you played. You don't own any other games, or if you do, it's mostly game that you try and don't play.
I have Bloodborne. I suck at Bloodborne. That's sort of the point of Bloodborne, though. Bloodborne is basically like the spin-off game from the Dark Souls series, and before that, Demon's Souls. It's not a Souls game per se, because the copyright doesn't belong to Sony. It's just like this offshoot thing that was a one-off PS4 exclusive title by From Software that is just very, very similar to Souls games. But the way the levels are structured in that game, they are incredibly, incredibly hard. They don't tell you much about how to play the game. That is by design. It's meant to be very much like old NES games and whatnot that just basically threw you into the game and let you deal with what they throw at you. It has never been so frustrating to turn a 90 degree angle in a video game, because that's basically how the levels are structured. Is basically every 90 degree angle you get another hallway of crazy shit to get through to get to the next place, and you have several 90 degree angles to go through to get to the next checkpoint. And I just suck terribly at the game. I haven't gotten past the first level, and I think I've played maybe 11 hours.
Good. Which brings me to the last question, is all of those games that you mentioned are for the PS4, meaning that they were designed for the PS4 in mind. It's not...
Not really.
Not really? Okay. Because
Darius Burst is an arcade port, like I mentioned. And Skullgirls is just a re-release for the PS4. It was previously on arcades and PS3 and Xbox 3.
Okay, so this means then that only Bloodborne and Street Fighter V are like current gen
exclusives.
Games.
Yeah.
Good. Because my point is, for my current experience is, and it was kind of a joke between you and I, is most of the games that I own are mostly A, remasters, or B, just games from the PS3 that are available on the PS4. I did buy Drive Club and Project Cars. Yes, both of them. I did buy both of them during the holidays pretty cheaply, because I think Drive Club is kind of dead right now.
Yeah.
So I haven't played that much to it, because I think I'll have to try it again. But I don't think I kind of like the driving feeling of it.
No, I understand.
And it's, I think the best way to explain it is, it feels to me too artificial compared to Project Cars, that feels too real. And what I mean by that is, it feels this game kind of forces you to have a real wheel and not use the controller. It's either that, or I'm just really, really bad with the controller in this game.
That sounds about right, though, from what I've heard of Project Cars. I haven't played it. Drive Club is really weird because it's sort of straddling right in the middle of arcade racing and simulation racing, and it's sort of not sure which one it is, and sometimes it feels really weird. And I think that we're both huge fans of the Gran Turismo series. I think Gran Turismo just nails everything about how to control the car, and I just can't wait for a Gran Turismo title to be on PS4.
Yeah, and the best thing, not the best thing, but the best comparison I can do for between Drive Club and another game would be old Need for Speeds.
Yeah, like, that sounds...
They were always on the edge of, am I an arcade game, like, or just a virtual driving game, or I want to simulate real physics. And you never knew which side you were with that game. And Drive Club feels the same. But it's great. Like, we did mention in the past that they played that game with your own copy, like, 200 kilometers away from your PS4 using the party play feature. So it's not that hard to control cars. That's the point I was getting to. Which drives me to the last point about the current experience. My current experience with the console is still waiting for those current gen games. And I know that they are coming. The main one that I'm waiting for is Uncharted. And sadly, it kind of becomes a meme between you and I, is every time we see news that it got delayed, you like to mention to me that it got delayed again. And yes, it got delayed again.
May, right?
Yes. At this point, I'm sure it will come like in July. So it will be sunny outside, and then I will want to be outside, enjoy summer, and then I will want to stay inside.
I'm pretty sure that Naughty Dog said that this was going to be the last delay. I'm not sure how they can say that categorically and be sure of it, but there you go.
Yeah, and at least just before the holidays, we were able to play the beta for the multiplayer online feature. Also over the weekend, so when this podcast will be released, it will be nearly over. But this weekend, between May 4th and May 6th, there will be a stress period to stress test the multiplayer feature, which I kind of plan to play Uncharted multiplayer a lot over the weekend. And it drives me to a point that is, it's one of those multiplayer shooter game that I really enjoyed in the last few years. Like, I never was a big fan of the typical first-person shooter games that are pretty popular and that I mentioned that are on the top charts for either the Xbox or the PlayStation. But I don't know if it's either because we're in the Uncharted territories, or it's just that they are doing something different that I cannot point my finger on. But yes, I can recognize some patterns that are used in other multiplayer games, shooting multiplayer games online. But there's always something different. Maybe it's because you can like climb walls, and then you have weird features that you can do that that it will be also part of the Uncharted single player mode. I just want to play a lot to it and never stop, which is something new for me.
Yeah, that's more or less how I feel about Destiny. Aside from that, do you have any other PS4 titles you're looking for in the horizon?
In the near-term horizon? I don't know. You just mentioned that we are eagerly awaiting for the next Gran Turismo, but we don't know when it will come out.
Yeah, they said spring for the beta, so fingers crossed we'll have news about that soon. I'm personally really excited for it's half a remake and half a new game. Ratchet & Clank is coming to PS4 in April because they're making a Ratchet & Clank movie. So they're making a game to go alongside it, and it's supposed to be like a remake of the original Ratchet & Clank, except with cinematic presentation. And from what I've seen of it, it looks absolutely insane and really, really nice. So I'm probably going to be picking that up because I've always been really curious about the Ratchet & Clank series. And people who have good taste in games seem to like it as well. So I'm probably going to be checking that out. But aside from that, looking forward, aside from like PlayStation VR stuff, which we're going to talk about shortly, and whatever the next thing in Destiny is, I can't say I have that many games I'm looking forward to on PS4 in the near future, like this year.
Yeah, and it's kind of the same for me, but it is a good thing because right now I kind of have a big backlog of games that I want to play that should have played maybe on the PS3 that I haven't played. A good example of that is, but it's even like, what, it's not even on PS2, it was on PS2, is Final Fantasy X and X-2.
I still need to finish X-2.
Right. And the funny story about me buying Final Fantasy X is I bought the remaster on the PS3, thinking that I would have time to play on the PS3, and never played on the PS3. Then bought the PS4 and saw a good deal about the PS4 version of it. And then I was like, okay, let's buy it. And I bought the PS4 version. So my guess at some point in the near future, because the Vita is it will be dead like in 3, 2, 1. So I'll be able to find good deals about of the Vita version. So I'll be able to have it on all the three consoles and never play to it. But at least I will have it on the three consoles.
I did a better job than that. I got halfway through the game and then I got stuck at a puzzle in a dungeon, and that is where I am right now.
Okay. Other games, and yes, they are still part of the remastered games. I really want to play to The Last of Us Remastered. I want to replay the game because I played it at its PS3 launch. Also part of the remastered version, there's the DLC included, so I would want to play the DLC too. Recently, I finished Metal Gear Solid 5.1, let's call it this way, the first part of Metal Gear Solid 5, which is, what, 2 or 3 hours, even if you're bad, like me. And still planning to buy the full-on Part 2, which is the real game, which, as far as I remember, people enjoyed quite a lot. It had good reviews.
I think people received it a lot better than whatever the prequel's name is. I forgot.
Ground Zeroes?
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah, Ground Zeroes.
Yeah. I found Ground Zeroes to be incredibly disgusting, so I didn't play it to completion because certain moments were just too gross and I didn't like it. But I understand people like Metal Gear and it's fine. It's just not for me.
It's not that bad. Let's be honest for a sec. It's just that when you're used to full-featured Metal Gear Solid games, it's just like this one is a mission in the full-featured game.
No, that's not the problem I had with it. The problem I had with it was the story was just gross. It was grossing me out and I didn't like playing it. It made me feel bad for playing it, so I didn't play it.
Oh, okay.
That's
yeah.
All.
Without spoiling it, I could see why.
Yeah. And apparently Metal Gear Solid 5, the full version, is much better about that. But I just got turned off entirely. And besides, I prefer the gameplay from the Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2 era to the new kind of gameplay. So I'm fine with not playing it. I know I'm like the only PS4 owner who won't be playing it, but I don't care.
Good. So now that we talked a bit about the games we like to enjoy, let's move to the current situation in the coming months for the PS4. So like we mentioned at the top of the show, the PS4 situation is great so far. It started on top and data suggests that this trend is not stopping. And I would like to touch some points. Why is that happening? And the first one I want to touch on is Sony delivered most, if not all, of the feature that people ask at the end of the last generation. Starting at the end of the last generation, Sony realized that the PS3 was keeping up with the Xbox 360 and wouldn't be a failure, but it wouldn't be a big success. And I'm sure what they realized is they needed to prepare the next generation and they wanted to be on top for the next generation. And one of the strategies is to start ask developers what they would like to see from Sony console. And obviously the ask in the devs too, because we mentioned it in the Xbox episode and the Xbox 360 did a big push on indie games. And in my opinion, Sony realized that doing so earlier would have maybe brought more success to the PS3. And they would want to keep and capture some of that market with the PS4.
And it was also really just icing on the cake that Xbox also basically completely cut off indie relations for the Xbox One.
Right, but I don't think at the same time that these like maybe diminished their relationship with indie studios. I think they kept the train at full speed ahead and still continued building strong relationship with indie studios, asking for what they want in their and the Sony consoles and try from their best to deliver those features. And yes, that's what they did. A big example of that these days is just the PSN Plus free games of the month. I've been subscribed to that feature since maybe a year and a half now, maybe nearly two. And I remember when it was announced for the PS3 and the Vita, and I remember that it was more a catalog that was always available. And I was still in that idea that PSN was working this way until I realized that it was not. And it made me enjoy and find a lot of indie games that, in my opinion, I wouldn't have known about. Like, those indie games are being promoted by Sony, by the server. And I think the big push of indie games on PSN Plus Free Games of the Month is helping the strategy a lot.
I think it doesn't feel as good as a deal as it was during the PS3 era, because during the end of the PS3 era, they were pumping out full retail games basically every month on PS Plus. And now on the PS4, well, first of all, there aren't that much retail games to actually give away relative to the PS3, because the PS3 had a mature game library at that point. But mostly they're giving away indie games that go for like $20 instead of going for maybe $40 retail games. And I think it just doesn't feel as nice to me. And of course, there's a part of that, which is I just don't enjoy most indie games that much. So I just find a lot of the game choices right now to be completely unpleasing. And probably the best example of that is the month of February, where PS3 owners got Persona 4 Ultimax, which is the Persona 4 fighting game by Arc System Works, which is an awesome game. And like, you compare that to what PS4 got, and I was like, yeah, the PS3 had the better games. And I think that PS4 should basically have the most attractive games right now on PS Plus, and that's not really happening. More often than not, the PS3 games are way more interesting to me than the PS4 games for the same month.
You do have a point, and I would think that, in my opinion, I don't care that much, because the game that I found mostly interesting are not old successes from the PS3, and more of those interesting and games that, let's be honest, if I were looking for a new game to buy, I would never look at those games. So the fact that kind of Sony is forcing my hand in a way, it's like lightly forcing my hand, let's be honest, but just exposing me to those games, I'm just finding new games. And if I'm able to get a game per month, even if it's $20, I still find value for it. But you're right that for the PS3, even to this day, I feel that they are still like pumping out big titles for free each month.
Yep, and if I play devil's advocate, of course, similar to the Steam sale situation, this has the side effect of completely devaluing games, because you have people who are paying basically $11 a month to get free games every month. And if they get used to getting the greatest titles every month for $11 a month, then they are never going to buy retail games again. And I know a lot of people on the PS3 side of things who basically stopped buying games as soon as that started happening, and they were getting quality game after quality game every month for free. They were like, well, it's inevitable that this game is going to be free on PS Plus eventually, so I'm just not going to buy games anymore. And I don't think that's healthy either, but I think that there's a middle ground somewhere we at.
And it's even cheaper than $11 per month.
Well, I was thinking with current exchange rate, it's probably bumped up.
No, I was looking, I need to renew my subscription, and the subscription is still like $50 per year.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So I think you're mixing it with Now, which is maybe like,
yeah, that's 10, possible.
10 or 12.
So in either way, it's but even not expensive for a game every month.
No, you're right. You're right. Even if you like, you end up maybe getting like 10 games per year, it's just an amazing deal.
Yeah, and another trick, something I had recommended to you, is before you owned a PS4, I told you every month go on the web store and claim the PS4 game, so that when you get a PS4, you also already have a library of games you can play. And I know people who bought Vitas for that reason as well, because they had a library of Vita games that they had built up over the months getting them via their PS3. So I think that's also a good strategy to get people to adopt their platform, is if you give them free games and they keep claiming them, then they already feel like they have an investment in that console and get that console.
Right, and that's my strategy. Since that I knew that you can use it via the web store, every month I just go through the web store, and I would say that I download every game every month. I will like read about the game and watch the videos and the previews about them, and if they feel like a game that would at least play a couple of hours and enjoy them for a couple of hours, I will try them. If not, I just never download them. Next up, I don't think we can say that everything has been a huge success with the current console. Obviously, there are still drawbacks, and a big one that I would like to mention, it's, even if I say it's a big one, in the end, in the like big picture, it's not that big. But Sony's still trying to push us to the PlayStation Move and the PlayStation camera.
I wouldn't say they're really doing that much anymore.
Yeah, they tried. I don't think they tried this year, but it was still part of the like marketing and marketing train in the first year of the PS4. And you're right, I do hope that either they fix the situation to make sure that everybody gets one, or they just abandon the idea.
Well, they're not abandoning the idea, because the PlayStation Move is the controller you use when you're VR.
Oh, interesting. But it's really interesting, like, all of those PlayStation Move, and especially the PlayStation camera. Because, especially for the PlayStation camera, it has been an accessory that has been available on previous PlayStation.
Yeah, it was called the iToy on
PlayStation 2.
On PS2, and it was
PlayStation
I, yeah.
Yes, for the PS3. And even for, I think it got more traction with the PS2, I was looking at the lineup of games, and a lot of music and especially DDR games were having support for it.
Yeah, and on PS3, the big highlight was The Eye of Judgment, which was a trading card game you could play with physical cards, except that if you used it in front of the camera, you could actually have your monsters spawn on top of your cards, which was actually a pretty neat effect. But I remember hearing that the trading card game itself wasn't that well balanced, and if you still have to buy physical cards and whatever, it's sort of a turnoff for people who play video games and whatnot. But
right, especially another thing that I learned while prepping for the show is that Gran Turismo 5 on the PS3 supports the PSI for head tracking purposes, and I will put a YouTube video in the show notes that demos this feature. Obviously, this feature is mostly useful when you have a multi-screen setup, because as you will see in the video, the guy is kind of the game is able to track your head, but it's kind of hard to move your head if you want to look on your right but still look at the screen. But my point being by mentioning GT5 is, and mentioning the game you just mentioned on the PS3, is Sony has good ideas, and maybe not the best implementation again, but they could have better traction with those games if those accessories were included with the console. But I see I'm being my own devil's advocate, is I could see that it, yes, will rise the price of the console, and it is a trade-off hard to make.
Yeah, and I don't think most gamers actually care about those features that much.
Yeah, you're kind of right, but would you care more if it was already included with your purchase?
Probably not.
I would err on the side of saying yes.
Like, the only people I know who are actually actively using the PlayStation camera right now are streamers who use the built-in streaming for Twitch, because then it'll show the PlayStation camera in the upper right-hand corner of the stream. Otherwise, I know absolutely no one who is using it.
Yeah, but that's a good feature, especially with the share feature. That's pretty neat. I didn't know about that feature.
Yep.
Good. Next point before PSVR and the future. We also mentioned, we talked about indies, but what is the current situation with big studio? And we see that the trend right now with big studios is the exclusive games are I wouldn't say they're becoming rarer, but it feels to me that there's a trend of let's make sure that all of the consoles on Earth can play our game. But we will try to bring exclusive stuff to popular platforms. And it seems to be the strategy that big studios will err on. Like, they will be doing that. Because, in a way, since they have big IPs or big brands, they kind of don't need the push from Sony the same way that some indie studios might need the push and or getting the placement of their game in PSN and stuff like that. By making sure that gamers that are playing certain version of the game on specific platforms by bringing exclusive stuff to them, it gets the ball rolling, in my opinion. Okay. yeah, I get
I mean, I had nothing really to add aside from...
No, but that's fine. We can move on if you don't.
Okay.
Go on. You were about to say something.
Yeah, so I sort of see something similar to that with Destiny, because Destiny has exclusive guns, which are only on PlayStation, and exclusive missions, which are only on PlayStation for a year. A thing to note is that the way Destiny is structured, next year that content is going to be irrelevant even if Xbox gets it. So it has absolutely no use, basically, that content when it comes to Xbox, which is hilarious.
Ooh, that's funny.
Yeah, like...
because the game itself will kind of make it expired. Not expired, but like it will become irrelevant in your gaming
experience.
The
stats are useless, basically, because the gun is too weak for the new content of that year. So you can't actually use the gun in the new year content unless it's been upgraded for year two. But you still need a copy of the old gun to upgrade to year two. And you won't have one because you're an Xbox owner who didn't have access to that during year one. So you have to go basically hunt it in year one content. And it's a giant mess. And basically what I'm saying here is some of the greatest Destiny players are actually on Xbox, which is surprising because basically everyone is playing on PS4. And when they have tournaments that are on PS4, they basically have to go onto their PS4 characters if they have a PS4. But most of the serious Destiny players basically have to have one. And then they go grind and grind and grind until they can replicate exactly the same setup they have on Xbox. Because if they don't have the same guns, they aren't basically competitive with the rest of the people on the tournaments and everything. It's crazy.
And the platform used in tournaments is the PS4.
Generally, yeah, because basically everyone is on PS4 except for like these three really good players.
No, and it feels to me that not only Destiny, but most big studio games will do that. Like they will kind of force you on the side, saying like, "Yeah, if you bought an Xbox One, it will be available, it will work, you'll have all of the feature we said it will have, but it will be missing this, like, this small cherry on the cake." Oh, but it's so small, but at the same time, it's so big because everybody wants it.
Yeah, but the asterisk here is, in competitive play, this is kind of a problem because the guns that are exclusive to PlayStation 4 are of exotic rarity, and exotic guns basically have... Each gun has an exclusive perk that is only on that gun and has special effects that basically no other gun can replicate. And the problem is, when you're in a competitive game, someone can be using that game against you and you don't know how to deal with it. And that can be a problem, especially when you can't experience that gun against you on Xbox for a whole year. You basically have to have a PS4 on the side to basically try and see what the game is like on that side to see how it differs from what you're experiencing on Xbox. And if that gun becomes incredibly popular on PS4 side and you're not used to dealing with it, then that can be a problem, which was sort of a problem with one of the PS4 exclusive guns called Hawkmoon in Destiny. It's basically the best game, one of the best guns in the game for year one, and it wasn't in the game until this year. On Xbox, and that gun can basically take half your health in one shot if you're lucky. And if you're not used to dealing with that gun, you can be very surprised when you die in basically two shots.
Right. So this kind of means that if you want to be good at games, you need to buy the right console and pay money to big studios, which is...
Yep, and right now that console is the PS4 overwhelmingly.
Which I can see your point about the competitiveness of things, where at some point it's not the skills of people, but the amount of money people have, which can be not bad, but just a bit sad. See, I was sure that you had something to say about that point. I was so sure that this pause was a good place to be.
Actually, I just don't want the show to be 3 hours long, so I'm going to let it move on.
Good. Next point, I want to talk a bit about the future, and if we will talk about the future of the PS4, right now the future of the PS4 is with VR. So last episode you teased a bit about why you would want to buy PlayStation VR. Care to comment about it a bit?
Yeah, so PlayStation Experience was in December, I think. That sounds about right. Or late November, or somewhere around there. And they announced basically the launch lineup, for PlayStation VR. And there were two games that really caught my eye. The first is Res Infinite, which is a Res, which is a music/shooter, rail shooter game from the Dreamcast that is very, very popular in certain circles. It's notable in music gaming circles because the soundtrack is amazing. And it's one of those games that is incredibly immersive and colorful and the kind of thing you want to play in the most immersive experience ever. So it makes perfect sense for VR.
Wait a sec. Was that the game that they at the press conference, they were putting journalists in like vibrating suits?
Yes. Okay. And on the Dreamcast and the PS2 releases, there was the Trance Vibrator, which was an accessory you could use to play the game while vibrating to the beats of the music and perhaps maybe even other things.
It was so obvious that we were trying to just walk around the obvious topic here.
Yeah, you can totally use it to masturbate playing Res. Anyway, so basically the suit was like the modern day equivalent to that. Now you can have your entire body pulsating to the music because why the fuck not? So that game makes perfect sense for VR. And I am very much looking forward to seeing that basically in VR in 120 frames per second, like mind's blown. And it's probably going to be amazing. And really smart people are working on it at Q Entertainment and at 8.4. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that. The second thing that sold me on VR is completely the opposite, basically, of that game. It's 100-foot robot golf, which is a game where you play golf as a 100-foot robot. Except the funny part about it is it basically looks like a Sega Saturn game from the 1995. Whoa. With really primitive 3D. It looks amazing.
Okay. It's hard for me to imagine you enjoying a game where you play golf.
No, but it's hilarious because you're a giant robot and you can run around the town, except you crash into buildings and they blow up.
Oh my goodness. Okay, that sounds funny indeed.
And I think you can even put like a dog in the robot and have the dog play golf as a robot. It's amazing. I'll put a link to the trailer in the show notes. Because you have to see those. But basically, 100-foot robot golf sounds like the stupidest thing in the world, and that's why I want to play it on PlayStation VR. And funnily enough, about that, 100-foot robot golf's developers made an open call this week on Twitter for people who want to test the game, and they are bringing it out to major cities around the United States and maybe Canada, I guess, around North America, and they are going to be bringing PlayStation VR hardware so people can help them play test their games, because of course if they're going to be a launch game they can't really play test because nobody has the hardware. So that sounds really interesting, and that probably leads right into what you were going to talk about, which is there's a PlayStation VR event coming up very soon.
Yes, before I talk about that, I just want to backtrack a comment I made in the past regarding VR. I might be interested in buying a PlayStation VR in the end.
Oh,
yeah.
What changed your mind?
While prepping for the show again, I realized and forgot about that detail, but Gran Turismo Sport, which is supposedly not Gran Turismo 7, but a game to make you wait a little bit more, which should be like kind of a fully feature but not fully feature Gran Turismo, whatever. It's supposedly coming out, like we mentioned, in the second part of 2016.
As a beta.
And during the announcement, they said that it will be VR compatible.
Yeah,
and
that's really exciting.
It is exciting because to do immersive car simulator game, in most cases, you kind of need to have a big TV setup in your place. Because to be immersive, It is even more immersive when you have multiple screens showing the car environment and the track. And you could easily find those set up on the internet where you see like people having like two or even three monitors driving the game, which from what I learned recently is pretty funny on the PS3. You kind of need one PS3 per monitor. And it's amazing what they do. It's kind of an internal network, and then you say that one PS3 is a server and the others are like kind of just remote PS3. It's strange but interesting at the same time. But what I'm driving at is to have an immersive setup with a racing seat, with a great wheel, plus maybe two or three monitors, it is becoming A, expensive, and B, its own room in your house. And I think VR will kind of fix that.
Yeah.
Because you'll still be able to keep your seat and your wheel, but you won't need the screen.
Yeah, and I have great faith in Polyphony Digital's ability to pull it off in a performing way, because Gran Turismo 4 was one of the few PS2 games that could actually run in 1080i. And I know 1080i is not very impressive now, but it was very impressive back in the day on a console that was basically always running in 480p.
Right, it's pretty impressive for the PS2, still to this day.
Yeah, and it was still running 60 frames per second and everything, which is pretty mind-boggling when you think about it.
Didn't know about that.
Yeah, they've had to do some crazy hacks to actually get it to run that well, but they can do it. So VR is very similar in the way that you are doing so much with regards to VR, and frame rate matters so much in VR, so you don't have motion sickness and whatnot, that if anybody can get Gran Turismo running at a good enough performance level to actually work in VR, it's Polyphony.
Though I think the VR support in GT Sport will be minimal. And you kind of touch a point with Polyphony Digital is their Gran Turismo games that are the best on each console is always the last one. Look at the PS2. It's Gran Turismo 4, which was the last one.
Well, it's very similar to how Apple designs products. They have a very iterative approach to just make the game better and better and better. And personally, I think my favorite of all the entire series is 4.
Oh, I totally agree with you on that.
But I think that, like you said, they keep perfecting it on every platform, and the last one is just like always a gem of that console's library.
Yeah, exactly, because the same comments that you made about the PS2 version that is pretty optimized and they were getting so much power out of the PS2, they did the same with GT6, with the PS3. They say like, when they launched the game, they were mentioning that they did stuff that other devs didn't do with the PS3 because they didn't want to optimize the game for this PS3 specifically. And it is kind of not okay, but expected if you want to run your game on both consoles of the same generation, either the 360 or the PS3. You cannot like lose time on specific like console specific optimization, where a company like a Polyphonic can just do that, and because they're only on the PS3.
Yep.
Good. So we will stop speaking about PlayStation VR because like Yannick mentioned, there's a big event coming on March 15. So I'm sure we'll have a bit of follow-up in the coming episodes regarding this event. But just to put it in perspective, my obvious guess is that we'll get a release date and a price. Because right now, we know that the Oculus is $599 US and it will be shipping in Q2, Q3 of this year. And between last episode and this episode, between the Xbox and PC gaming episode and this episode, HTC finally confirmed the price of the HTC Vive and also started to ship some gamers that really want the unit now units.
Early access.
Thank you. They were able to ship early access units in this week, if I recall correctly, or it's about to ship.
I know they put the order form up this week. I wasn't aware they had started.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard sometimes to see on Twitter if it's like real customer or journalist. But Oh, well. So it's about to ship early access units, and the price for it is $7.99 US, and the real units will ship in April. So my guess for the PlayStation VR is it will be either, I don't bet that much on it, but it will be either cheaper than both options that I just mentioned, or will be in the middle of this range. So between $5.99 and $7.99. Which drives me to the point about VR is VR will be expensive this year. And maybe that will be my blocking factor to not buy a set. Because if it's like, let's just say the same price as the Oculus, $5.99, your PS3 is cheaper, or your PS4 is cheaper than the VR headset.
I think if they sell it at cost, they can sell it for $400.
Which is still okay, but at the same time, it's as expensive as the PS4.
Right, but it depends, like, if PlayStation really wants to cement their position as being the VR platform right now and the most accessible VR platform, they could sell it at cost and just see where that goes. Because I think really their end game is we want to sell more PS4s, not necessarily we want to sell more VR headsets. And if PlayStation 4 becomes the easiest way to experience VR, people are going to be buying the VR headsets and then buying the VR games and maybe getting a PlayStation Plus subscription. So it all ties in together. You attach people to the console by selling these VR headsets that maybe you don't actually need to make profit on the headsets. And that would be a real fuck you to the other players in the market. And it would also, if there's a big enough install base, which is sort of the problem with the PlayStation Vita, which we're going to get into, if there's a big enough install base of people who have these VR headsets, developers will be more compelled to develop for the PlayStation VR than for other platforms that do VR right now, which require hefty gaming rigs that maybe not that many people have. Whereas a lot of people, 35 million people, have PlayStation 4s right now in their living rooms. So if they really want to experience VR, maybe $400 is a reasonable price for them to do so.
Right, and that's why I'm kind of torn between those prices, because I understand the fact that right now, if you want to use Oculus or HTC Vive, you'll need a beefed up PC. So the setup, the price for the setup on the PC side is not those prices, is what, maybe $2,000 or $3,000. But if Sony is able to sell the VR headset around the same price as its competition or even lower, a full on VR setup, including the PS4, will be what, around $1,000? Maybe
$800-$900.
Yes. And even that is just like cutting competition by itself. And that would be pretty interesting to see what the competition will do.
Yep.
Which drives me to my conclusion regarding PS4. So the PS4 has a nice start, but I think that this year will be quite interesting. I think that Microsoft is finally ramping up with the Xbox One on certain feature. VR will be huge this year, and Sony really need to not less on their laurels, and they need to kick some ass again in the coming months and coming years.
Yeah, and I don't think there are actually any signs that they're going taking it easy this year by not really doing anything and just taking advantage of their number one position. I think they're going to continue to be really aggressive and pump out more games that people really want. Last year's E3, again, was mind-blowing for many people because they basically made two games that people never thought would happen by funding them, and they could still do that this year. I'm not really sure what's left on the big gamer wish lists for this year, but they'll surely find something to do.
Yeah, I guess at this point it's just bring more games to the console and that's it.
Yeah.
Good. Now that we talked a lot about Sony's strong position, let's talk about Sony weak position in another market.
No. Actually, they're not that weak, but we'll see.
Yeah. Before we start complaining about the PlayStation Vita, let's go through a small history of it. So the Vita was launched in December 2011 in Japan and in February 2012 in North America and Europe.
I got mine on launch day.
Oh, really?
Yes, I did.
Nice. There was also a 3G version of the Vita that would have internet access with different internet access provider in different countries. A year later, 2 years later, sorry, Sony launched the PlayStation Vita Slim, which was 20% thinner, 15% lighter, and add 1 hour more of battery, because they decided to drop the OLED display to go with LCD. And another interesting feature is they decided to ditch their custom charging port for micro USB. We all know that Sony love custom things on their hardware, and it's pretty interesting they decided to go to micro USB. And the PlayStation Vita Slim was launched in October 2013 in Japan, and in February 2014 in Europe, and lastly in May 2014 in North America. A nice interesting console that was launched by Sony was the PlayStation Vita or TV, or PlayStation TV, depending on which market you are located. And the PlayStation TV was all of the internals of the Vita that can be plugged in to a TV. So it shipped with a DualShock 3, and some bundles were also shipped with Lego games in North America, if I recall correctly.
It didn't always ship with a controller. It's only if you got a bundle that it came with.
Oh, I see. So the cheaper version is only the console.
Yeah, for $99, you get just the console. Well, these are the prices when it launched, but $99, you had just the console, and I think $129 or $149, you had it with the console. Yeah, I wasn't sure. It's been a long time.
Yeah, and all of this launched in November 2013 for Japan, October 2014 in North America, and November 2014 in Europe. Yeah, now let's talk about consoles sold. I don't have any number. The only number I found, no, seriously.
It's sold so little, you don't have a number.
No, it's funny though, because there's no confirmed numbers, but I was able to find a website called VG Charts with a Z.
Yeah, don't trust their numbers.
Their numbers shit. So okay.
Yeah,
they are reporting 12 million units since launch. If true, if you said that their number of shit, but even then, if it's 10 plus, this means that Sony sold as much PlayStation Vita on the longer period. Oh no, it's on the about the same period as Nintendo with the Wii U.
Yeah.
And we know how much of a success the Wii U is.
Yeah. So it's no surprise that I love the PlayStation Vita.
Yeah, I think I could skip the best-selling game, because yet again we don't have any good numbers. But funny aside, is on the same list that I mentioned with the PS4 from GameSpot, Minecraft is number 2. The PlayStation Vita version. I was surprised also to see that Persona 4 Golden is still selling quite a lot. It's number 6 for 2015. And the other interesting one was Gravity Rush, that I know that you'll enjoy a lot. But if I recall correctly, Gravity Rush was launched at the same time as the Vita, or really close after launch?
It was really close after launch in Japan. In fact, it was the very first import game I got for the Vita. And it released, I think, the May of 2012 or something like that. It was a little later than that. It was basically during summer of 2012 in North America.
Yeah, which would mean still close-ish to launch for North America.
Yeah, it was basically about the same timing as it was for the in distance between the Japanese launch and the release in Japan.
Right, but I feel it. I know that it is a quite acclaimed game, and there's good reviews of it, but it's pretty interesting to see it still on top charts 4 years after its launch.
Well, now it's on PS4. The remaster launches this week.
Ooh.
And it's a very, very interesting game artistically, and there is a lot of fun to be had just enjoying the mechanics of the game. I would not say it is a great game. I think it's a game that shows a lot of promise for where they could take it, and that's why I'm excited about Gravity Rush 2, which is probably going to be a PS4 only game. But I think it's really, if you like the art of video games and how you can have fun with mechanics, even though the game itself might be imperfect, it's a really interesting title to play. And I think anybody who enjoys open world games should definitely check it out, because it is an open world game, except you can fly everywhere, which is basically, that is the selling point, is it's an open world game. You can fly everywhere.
Yeah. And I think maybe I should try to find a cheap copy of it. Oh, well, we'll see. I still have a couple of PS Vita games that I need to play, which brings me to my experience with the console. I did forget when you bought yours. I didn't remember that you bought it at launch.
Yep.
And to be honest, I don't remember when I bought mine, which is a
problem. It was like 2 or 3 weeks after I got mine, because I saw you in Quebec City and I showed you Hot Shots Golf running on it, and you were like, oh, I need this now.
Yeah, I knew it was in 2012, but I didn't remember if I bought it right after launch. But now that you mentioned that, it rings a bell that maybe I bought it like, oh, so maybe I got it like in April or at the end of March, which would fit the timeline.
Yeah.
Okay, then. But when I was preparing the show, the timeline I was remembering was just before summer, so really close to launch. And it's quite interesting because at first I only had Hot Shot, then a year later went to Sweden and bought the Metal Gear Solid Remastered while I was away. And then the third game I bought was P4G, if I recall correctly. Might be mixing the order. I think P4G might got released before I left.
No, it came out that summer in Japan, so it couldn't have.
Summer 2013.
Yeah, that's when it came out in Japan, so you couldn't have bought it then. It came out afterwards.
Right, so I bought it after I came back. But that's my lineup of games for the PS Vita. And recently I bought Uncharted Vita, but for what, maybe 2 or 3 years, I owned two Vita games.
Yeah, I own a lot more than that, but I can say that I have not bought many Vita games recently because they just aren't coming out that much. I do still have Vita games on my list that I'm looking forward to, but a lot of the titles I was looking forward to just ended up not being very good, so I didn't even buy them because they weren't good. And I think that the glory days of it really was like 2 years ago, basically, when... right now my North American Vita is dead. So when it originally launched, PlayStation Vita is region-free, asterisk. And the asterisk is you can only be logged into one PSN account per memory card. And this didn't always used to be the case. Previously, you used to be able to do a cool little hack to have multiple regions on the same memory card. And that is no longer possible. It was patched out. So now you need to have proprietary memory cards from Sony, which are really expensive. You need to have at least two of them, and hopefully with enough storage. And you need to be able to swap between them. And it also requires deleting all of the settings on the local storage of your Vita. And it's really not a cool process. So in the end, I ended up buying... when this Vita 2000 came out in Japan, I ended up buying it alongside a copy of Puyo Puyo Tetris. And now I just have one for each region, except my North American Vita died. And the reason it died is because the memory card slot just completely stopped reading my memory cards, which is sort of a problem. And I guess now I'm waiting for the clearance sale for PlayStation Vita to buy a new North American Vita I can play my PSP games on. Because I stopped buying North American Vita games because they just weren't making any anymore. Or the only ones they were making were like really creepy anime boob games that I don't want to play.
Right. And I think every time I go to EB Games or any video game shop or any electronics shop that have a video game section, I always take a look at deals in the PlayStation Vita section.
If there is one.
If there is one. First of all, if there is one, that's a big if. And second of all, most of the time, it's always the same. And you mentioned to me in the past offline that most of those games that we got here in North America are really, really bad Japanese port of already bad games.
Yeah, they're sort of really like C-level titles. Like, not A, not B, no, C. That's more or less what we get. Recently, there was a Digimon game that was released in North America. That's maybe a B. It's really interesting if you are a tourist to Japan, because they've recreated Nakano Broadway in the game, and it's very authentic. So you can just wander around and see actual stores from within Nakano Broadway and see how they were made in the Digimon universe, and it's really interesting for that reason.
That's neat.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's also like a fine RPG. It's not super stellar, but it exists. It's probably better than most of the stuff that the Vita's gotten otherwise. But really, otherwise, it's just like borderline pornographic, not really great, but titillating, literally, Vita games from Japan that got ported over for God knows what reason, really, because they're not good. Why would you bring them? But I guess.
Because American loves boobs, 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 boobs.
It's true. I want to make a comparison very shortly of what the PlayStation Vita is like in Japan. So in the mid-90s, the Sega Saturn was basically the number two console in Japan for like TV consoles, not handhelds. And it had a lot of weird experimental games because the cost of development was rather low, even though seriously, like the Sega Saturn is a crazy hardware machine that is incredibly hard to develop for. But I mean, like relative to like what it would cost to make a PS3 game or whatever, the cost of development was incredibly low. So people were making weird experimental stuff. And the same can be said for, to a certain extent, on the PlayStation. You have that sort of weird experimentation going on the PlayStation Vita as well in Japan. It's not quite indie games because the indies aren't really making games for the Vita over there because indie games aren't really a thing in Japan. But you have a lot of weird games. Like Yomawari was announced last week, I think, to be coming to the Vita in North America, which is basically a game where you wander around a town at night and stuff happens. And like, that is not the kind of premise for a game that you would necessarily accept.
Especially if you tell me that, like, oh, you really, really need to try this new game. It's awesome. You wander around at night in cities and stuff happens. The first thing I think is, am I getting killed or something like that?
No. It's like weird ghost and mythology stuff that happens around the town or whatnot. It's like very Japanese culture-y, which is why it's even more surprising that it got localized for North America. But whatever, I'm not complaining. It's a Vita game. Like, there's other really weird stuff. Like, there was a new game in the Umiharakawase series, which is a video game about a girl with a fishing rod, who her fishing rod is actually made of elastic material, so you can bounce around attaching, sort of like Spider-Man, I guess, except it's a 2D side-scroller where you have to make it to the end of the course by throwing your fishing rod at the right places. And it's an incredibly awesome game, really. But that sounds completely insane to anybody who would play, like, Call of Duty. They would be like, why are you playing a game about a little girl with a fishing rod who faces giant fish and tadpoles and toads and weird aquatic creatures? It makes no sense. It sounds like you're on drugs. But that kind of weird shit comes out on the PlayStation Vita, and that's sort of why I appreciate it. And the other thing, of course, is, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, the Japanese market is much, much more amenable to handheld gaming. And that means that more or less all of the blockbuster Japanese titles these days are coming out either dual release on PS4 and PlayStation Vita, or only on PlayStation Vita. And PlayStation Vita versions of cross-platform games often outsell PS4 versions, much to the belief of American gamers who are like, what the hell is going on over there? But it's true. So I think there's a lot of interesting stuff that could be done. But nowadays, really, I think Sony is putting all of their energy into PS4 plus Vita development, because then they know if we localize this, we can localize only the PS4 version, which is the one that's going to sell in the West, and we can release both in Japan to either boost sales of the PS4 in Japan and continue to sell to our existing base on Vita. And I think that's probably a smart decision, except it means that Vita isn't really getting any new games in the West.
No, and this drives me to my first point in current situation of the PlayStation Vita, is the lack of games. And in the West, the PlayStation Vita is kind of the indie game platform, because most of the games that I own are not on a PS Vita cartridge. They are in the memory stick, and they are either PlayStation mobile games, which I'll mention a bit about later on, or they are cross-platform game. They are cross-platformers. Games that I also own either on, rarely on the PS3, but most of the time on PS4 too.
Yep.
Yeah, so the lack of game is what turned me off on the PlayStation Vita. You did mention that you had maybe a short list, but still a list of PS Vita games to buy. Mine is now to zero because I bought the last two games that I wanted, and which brings me to a funny story. I bought them on PSN, so I need to buy a new memory stick. And the problem is I don't want to buy just tiny memory stick again.
Yeah, you want the 128 gig one, which is like $100.
There's a 128?
I think it's only out in Japan, but it's what I have in my Japanese Vita for Phantasy Star Online, which basically gets a 2 gigabyte patch every month. So wow. That's why I have to.
I was mostly looking in the 32 gig, which here in Canadian dollars, like still, by the way, still $80.
Yeah,
they kind of know that. The Vita is not selling, but at least we still have tons of digital content for it. So let's make sure that the memory stick is still available.
I feel kind of bad for Sony with that situation because the entire reason they went for proprietary memory cards over a more standardized thing is the fact that the PSP had basically like these standard memory cards, even though they were memory stick, which were technically proprietary Sony memory cards anyway, except you could just buy readers for them for your computer, that piracy on them was the default. Basically, there was no one with a PSP who wasn't pirating games, more or less. Even in Japan, which is strict as hell for piracy stuff, everybody was pirating PSP games over there as well. So that's not really great for them. And in their effort to shut down that piracy, they basically said, okay, we are shutting down basically any kind of direct access to the console, which is partly the reason to blame for that proprietary charging port, which is absolutely terrible connector design on their part, because the pins basically are half broken on mine anyway.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's kind of a shitty 30 pin connector.
It's terrible. At least like Lightning is respectable because it's actually an improvement on what they had as options at the time, whereas this monstrosity of a Vita connector, there is nothing good about it, and there never will be a good thing about it, and on top of that, it's unreliable as hell. But that's another topic. So yeah, they were trying to get rid of the piracy problem, and they largely succeeded. The problem is there also weren't any games for it. That's sort of the other issue, is like there wasn't, even if you were wanting to pirate, there was basically nothing to pirate because there were like 8 games on store shelves basically.
Oh right.
And a bunch of indie.
And I think right now the 3, if you want to buy a Vita, first of all, get a cheap one. Try to find a cheap one. And second of all, the 3 games that are available in North America that you want to play are Persona 4 Golden. And obviously, if you've played it on the PS2, it's the same game again. And the, I'm sure I'll butcher the name again, but the Danganronpa game?
Yeah.
Yes. Which are the last 2 games that I bought, because everybody is not renting, but everybody is praising them, and everybody says, if you have a Vita, first of all, oh my god, you have a Vita, second of all, you need to play those 2 games.
Yeah, but good luck finding them on store shelves, because you're not going to find them, more or less. They had short runs in North America, so you're going to have to buy them.
Yeah, and they were having a good deal last month? Yeah, last month on the PSN. I think they were like $10 or $12 each, which is pretty cheap.
Yeah, I think I have to decide if I want to play it in Japanese or if I want to buy the Mac port, because I don't necessarily want to buy a new North American Vita right now.
Right, and there's a Mac port of those games?
Yeah, when they launched it on Steam, they also brought a Mac port, as far as I can.
On Steam too?
I guess, yeah.
Okay. Now, let's move to the next point in the current situation. In my opinion, it's a new point, but I said shitty situation regarding remote play support of game. I spoke a lot in the past about remote play and how awesome it is until you start playing game, especially like PS4 optimized games, because developer needs to kind of create their own mapping for the PS Vita, or they can have a default mapping that the PlayStation 4 and the Vita will do by itself. But the problem is, when you want to play first-person shooter and you have a Vita which has one set of triggers, it's impossible to play those Souls game.
Except for Destiny, which has a good mapping.
Because they did, oh my goodness, they did a good mapping. So maybe then I'll play Destiny.
Maybe. Awesome.
Maybe. I said maybe. But yeah, over the other days, I wanted to play, I tried Project Cars, which, nope.
Yeah, well, I can imagine for like simulation physics, it's probably impossible to control.
Yeah, but the problem is, it is what those types of car simulator games where you use like the triggers to for the acceleration and the brake.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's not like Gran Turismo where you can use the old style of using analog controls, which I do love, but I know it's not the fastest way to be, so I don't care, but that's the way I enjoy Gran Turismo. Did I try The Last of Us? No, I didn't try The Last of Us, but I tried Metal Gear Solid 5, which was also not so great.
Yeah, because generally with those kinds of things, dark scenes perform way, way worse than light ones. And the entire game is basically a nighttime scene.
Oh, that was the colors and the performance and the graphics was fine. It's just the controls, again.
Oh, because I would imagine it would tear a lot more, because generally dark scenes do worse for that.
I wouldn't say it was... it's still, like I mentioned, like the first time I tried remote play, the quality was lower, I'm surprised how high quality it was in that circumstance.
Oh, well, that's good.
So, and yeah, I love remote play. If I were able to play games that I enjoy. The only game I ended playing was one of those indie games that I got cross-platform on PSN that, if I recall correctly, was too lazy to reinstall in the memory stick because I had the PlayStation Vita version too.
Well, I think that one thing that would perform really, really well that you mentioned earlier is the Final Fantasy X-X-2 remakes, because they're effectively turn-based RPGs. And if you're turn-based, you're not really in a hurry, so latency isn't as much of an issue. And on top of that, well, the controls are basically up, down, left, right, and select.
Right. Maybe I should try to... now that you mention that, maybe I should... That could be my solution to play Final Fantasy.
And the graphics would be better than the Vita version.
Right, in the near future. Now I think we have a plan.
Yay.
Good. Now, the PlayStation TV.
Oh my god, I'm so sad about this thing. So I don't remember if I said this on this podcast or wherever, but I had great hopes for the PlayStation TV.
I think that's what we could say about everything that contains the term Vita in it, is everybody had great hopes for it.
No, but yeah, but I said crazy things about the PlayStation TV, whereas I never really said crazy things about the PlayStation Vita. One of the things I said about the PlayStation TV, believe it or not, is that it would outperform the PS4 in sales, which
that?
Totally didn't happen. Yes, I said that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, owning up to your mistakes, right?
No, that's good.
Yeah. So my belief at the time, so this was in 2013 when the PlayStation had basically just come out, PlayStation 4. And basically the launch lineup was incredibly disappointing. There was basically nothing worth playing on the PS4 at launch, and you had this PlayStation TV thing which was shipping compatible with most of the big blockbuster PlayStation Vita titles. Unfortunately, not all of them, although there is a hack you can use to actually play any Vita game on the PlayStation TV. I should probably add a link to that in the show notes as well.
I would be interested in that hack if at some point
I'm not sure if it still works, but it worked at one point, and Digital Foundry has a video on how to use it, which is actually fairly clever. It uses a WebKit hack to actually circumvent certain things.
Nice.
Yeah. There was also like huge promise, and you can buy a console that is also capable of playing the entire PSP back catalog and the entire PlayStation Classics back catalog, which that's slightly less exciting in North America because the North American PlayStation store is horribly maintained and still does not have even all of the titles that are available on PSP on PlayStation Vita, which is kind of nuts because it's sort of the current platform and it's been that way for like 4 years now that you still can't buy all of the PSP and PlayStation 1 titles. Seems completely nuts. Even though they work, because if you have a PS3, you can download them on your PS3 and then transfer them to your PlayStation Vita, which I don't even understand anymore. It was really promising to have this rich back catalog of games for backward compatibility you can rely on, and also have these awesome Vita games that were coming out at the time and stopped coming out that you could also play on a TV that were more exciting than what was currently in the pipeline for PS4.
Though those Vita games had to be compatible with the DualShock 3.
Yeah, but like the games that I have in mind came out around the same time as the PlayStation TV, so they already had support built in because they were developed in parallel.
Okay.
Or were patched.
Right. But everything that you just mentioned to this point is specific to the PlayStation Vita TV launch in Japan. Because during the launch of it in Japan, they fucking mentioned that it's a Vita.
Yeah, they basically were showing off, there was this trailer that they were showing off of like the PlayStation Home, which is not the stupid PS3 thing where you could go around in virtual space and buy t-shirts for real money. But like a home with lots of PlayStation consoles in them, where they showed the entire continuum of you have a PlayStation 4 you can play on, you can take that game on the go with you on the PlayStation Vita, but there are also games on the PlayStation Vita which you can play on the go, and then when you come home, if you want to play them on the TV, you can go on your PlayStation TV, and your save will cloud sync over via PlayStation Plus, so you can continue to play that game by taking out the cartridge from your console and putting it into your PlayStation TV. And there was for some reason the other television was being taken up by someone else, you could connect remotely to the PlayStation 4. So it was like this complete circle solution of integration. And on top of that, something that we don't have here, there is the PVR that Sony does for the PlayStation, which is the best PVR I have ever seen, and we are never going to get here, called Nasne. And Nasne is compatible on all of those devices as well. So you can basically have all of your recorded television available on all of your consoles and also on the go via the PlayStation Vita, which is insane. So they had this like huge story of entertainment that is available to you everywhere, and they had this really compelling case to make. And even for a certain amount of time, the PlayStation TV was outselling the PS4 in Japan. I know it's hard to believe, but those were the early launch days. That has since stopped,
wow.
Unfortunately.
I'm surprised.
But the first few weeks of the PS4 launch were really not that great. And it was a really compelling story. Contrast that to how they launched it in the West, which is, they had no words in their press release about it being able to play Vita games. They had no words in it about being able to play PSP games. They had no word in the press release about it playing PlayStation 1 titles. So basically, three of the four ways you can play games on the PlayStation TV were not even mentioned in the launch press release, which seems insane.
No, it is insane because they didn't mention any feature where they would be forced to mention the word Vita.
Right. And that's because by that point, even first-party development of Vita titles had stopped within Sony. I think the only exception to that, and it's questionable if it's an exception or if it's because it's just a translation of an earlier title, is Soul Sacrifice Delta was basically like the last game that was released by a Sony studio that was made specifically for the Vita. And that came out shortly after the PlayStation TV launch, I think, over here. I don't remember the exact schedule because I had already purchased the Japanese version. But that is the last title that was made basically by Sony Studios for the Vita. Actually, I think Tearaway might have been a little later than that, but that was a Western title, so it's not really on my radar.
I don't know. It's a game that I didn't heard about or cared about.
Yeah. But basically, all of those titles, except for Soul Sacrifice right now, are on PS4. So if you want to play your Vita exclusives in higher resolution and faster frame rate, you can do so on the PlayStation 4, and it's probably the version to get, really, to be honest.
Right, and the main selling point for it in North America was,
you can extend your PlayStation 4 gameplay onto other televisions, and you can stream Netflix.
Yeah, but would it say it a little bit more slower and add please at the end?
Yeah.
Just to make it clear that they want you to buy it, even if you don't need it. Because if you just try to sell that, most people are like, why would I buy a PlayStation TV when, let's be honest, I'm already at home in my apartment playing PlayStation 4, so there's one person that can use the TV, and it's me.
And if I'm being brutally honest, I love the PlayStation Vita, but because there aren't any games for it, even now, I find myself playing way more hours on the PlayStation 4 than I do on my Vita, even though I love the thing, just because there's nothing to play on it except old PlayStation 1 or PSP games that I haven't had the chance to play yet.
Oh, you're totally right. And now this reminds me that the first game that I bought was Persona 3 on the PSP.
Yeah, for a lot of people, the PlayStation Vita is really just a more convenient PSP because it supports modern wireless networks, whereas most PSP models don't. And you basically have to create a second wireless network that's not protected very well for you to be able to even download anything.
You're right. So I think we touched most of the point I had for the current situation. I think we do not need to forget about this. To conclude on the PlayStation TV, shipment has stopped for it in North America and Europe at the end of 2015. And it's unsure if shipment is continuing for Asia. Sony
no,
says
it's,
yes.
It's over in Japan.
Oh, really? Because from...
Yeah.
Okay, then it's over. But it recently stopped, meaning it stopped maybe at the end of February, something like that.
Yep. It's basically dead everywhere. And it's not that surprising, really.
Yeah. Lastly, I did mention quickly PlayStation Mobile while complaining about the lack of games. So PlayStation Mobile was an SDK that was available on the PS Vita and on certain smartphones. It flopped catastrophically. And recently, Sony decided to shut down the whole system, including activation of game. So if you still add games using PSM, you're kind of right now out of luck because the activation window is now ended. It ended at the end of the month of February. So it was the main point for it is a common SDK where it's easy to develop mobile games that could also be pack ported to handheld devices, aka the Vita. And it was launched on specific Sony smartphone and also on the HTC One device series. So the first generation of HTC One, which was the X and the S.
Oh, it even works on later HTC One models as well.
Oh,
it's
really?
It's just that they didn't publicize it as much.
Okay, yeah. And I just remember at some point, like the reason why I know about PlayStation Mobile is at some point they were either giving a tons of game for free or a tons of game for like $5. So I did
it
end up...
It was two games a week for 4 weeks during Christmas.
And it was free, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did have tons of PSN games on my Vita. And for a while, was also the only games I were playing on. And right now, I'm not sure if I will be able to play them. But do I care that much about them? I do not, sadly.
There were like two games I really, really, really loved that I played a ton of on my North American Vita that I'm really sad I can't play anymore because now my Vita's dead. And I'm probably not going to be able to get them to work again on my new Vita if I ever buy one. But otherwise, the rest of the library, there were some interesting concepts, but nothing I would really play long term that much.
Yeah, and the one that I mostly enjoyed, I think I could just go on the iOS App Store and buy them again because they were like fully cross-platform. They were on Android, iOS, and also supporting PSM and the Vita. So I think you might be lucky. I think I might be also lucky and just find those games elsewhere.
Yeah, I have no such luck. They were developed specifically for the Vita in my case, so.
Oh, okay. Good.
Lost forever.
A last point I forgot to mention regarding my complaints about the Remote Play is Sony announced recently with their next PlayStation 4 OS beta that Remote Play will be supported via Mac and PC apps.
Which is not that surprising because Xbox does the same thing,
right? And they also do that with certain Sony Xperia tablets too, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, and for a while they did it on the Vio as well, except now Vio doesn't belong to Sony anymore. But yeah,
which brings me to the PlayStation Vita conclusion.
Oh no.
Okay, I'll have to say it. The PlayStation Vita was a series of disappointments in the West. I know that it might be like less drastic as you can apply this statement, but less drastically. The way the Vita was designed is built, the hardware feature of it is awesome, but the Vita is a great example of what happens when there's a problem with the software. And what I mean by software is lack of game support for a video game console.
Yeah, I think the Vita was incredibly ambitious in what it was trying to accomplish, because the original pitch for the PlayStation Vita is, we've made this console so it's incredibly easy for you to cross-compile PS3 games to it. And the idea was, you'd make a PS3 game that you'd be able to cross-save across PlayStation Vita and take with you on the go. And I've always had this mental idea of this ideal console where, at a certain point, graphics become good enough that you can just have the same console in both places at the same time, which may very well be what the Nintendo NX is. And there is a Nintendo Direct in 2 days that it might actually involve the NX somehow. We don't know. But it's an interesting concept to me, because I think there are a lot of games that are on PS4 that aren't necessarily something that wouldn't work on the go. And that it would be nice to have this sort of continuous experience where you can play the same game on both systems and just migrate your save over. And that sounds great to me. And there's also no problem of having games that are exclusive to just the big console or just the handheld console. If you have just one unified programming platform for both, that sounds like a good deal to me. And I'd be willing to take the sacrifice in graphical quality and whatnot to have that kind of cross-platform feeling. Clearly, I am alone in this club because gamers love graphics. I don't think that's really surprising to anyone. They are maybe even overboard with the PC Master Race stuff, that they really want like this stupid, huge and hot graphics card to pump out the most graphics in the world. I'm not one of those people. I care more about the quality of the game mechanics and how it feels to how it looks, and I don't think there are that many people who are left like that. So I guess I have to just live with the fact that I'm alone in that club and enjoy my PlayStation Vita as a fancy PSP and PlayStation 1 console, and occasionally pick up a title or two for it when one of them comes out in Japan.
Right, and it's quite funny because for me, the NLs of this generation was, I bought the Vita because I loved the device. And now that I'm remembered that I bought the Vita like close to launch, I was investing in the Vita in a way. And I just wish it got more traction.
Yeah, I think, like we've said in the Nintendo episode, a lot of people really wanted the Vita to be the device that succeeded. It just didn't. And the 3DS had all of the games that people wanted to play. And that's why people play on the 3DS, even though the console is technically terrible.
Right. And that's what's funny with my situation is I bought the 3DS a couple of years after it launched, knowing that it wouldn't be a good investment because I want to play to what? 5 games at most. Like, if I end up buying more than 5 games, I would be gladly surprised. But even knowing that, sadly, the 3DS for me was kind of a better investment. And I would conclude on that.
All right.
So hopefully, we'll be done speaking about video games for a while.
I somehow doubt that.
I do too. But hopefully, after all of the announcements that are coming in the coming days, we should be done for a bit. And we'll be able to go to other topics, maybe go back to our typical tech topics a bit, or even bringing new topics. I do have a couple of ideas that could be interesting.
All right. So you can find the show notes for this episode at limitlesspossibility.net/35, or you can find all of our episodes at limitlesspossibility.net. You can find the podcast itself on Twitter at limipo_podcast. That's LIMIPO_podcast. You can find myself on Twitter at Sakurina, SAKURINA, and you can find Ducadivi at
Lucanouche, that's LUCCONOUCHE.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.